Welcome to What in God's Name? She's Shana Appel.
And he's... Who are you? Chris Owen.
How many times have we done this, Shana? Come on now. We're doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view. And Shana, it's great to see you.
Good to see you, Chris. Good to be here today at our lovely studio and downtown. Well, we're not in downtown Wilton, but we are in Wilton, New Hampshire.
We are in uptown Wilton.
We are in uptown. Oh, excuse me.
We want to take a moment to thank you all. Thank our supporters for a successful fund drive.
Shana, yes, friends. Thank you for your contributions to keeping this show on the air.
Indeed, you're supporting our core values of curiosity, depth, and shining light. Today, we're going to talk about the Mueller Report. When I say Mueller Report, I'm referring to not just the report, but of course, all the events that it recounts. How do you have a theological or philosophical perspective on the Mueller Report? Well, keep listening and you will find out. Shana, here's my reflection on the Mueller Report. I was thinking about this and I had a thought experiment. My thought experiment was this. What if the Mueller Report and all the events, again, that it recounts are not the story, but rather that the Mueller Report is a chapter in a larger story? If that were the case, then I asked myself, what would be the larger story? What is the longer arc that the Mueller Report would be a part of?
It's such a fascinating question, and I think goes to the depth of what we do when we do theological reflection, right? Or one aspect of theological reflection, I guess, asks, what is this pointing to? What are the deeper issues?
Yes. And so I want to share with you and our listeners my thought.
Oh, good. I was wondering if you had one.
I was
on that.
Actually,
if you just
going to say
the question
that and not
or,
say anything. Yeah,
yeah,
it's, no, I wasn't going to follow up at all. I think the Mueller Report is part of a larger story of American decline, and more specifically, American moral decline.
Oh, boy. I'm heaving over here, Chris, because I think you're probably spot on, as you normally are. Do you want to say more about that?
So if you hear the phrase moral decline, you might be inclined to go to some kind of moral code. Like, sometimes we think of morality as rule following. There's this code of behavior that we should follow, and if you have moral decline, then somehow you are breaking that code. And I'm not necessarily, I mean, that's part of it, but I'm meaning something a little bit more than that, and I'll say more about this later. But when I think of moral decline, I'm thinking of the erosion of the invisible threads that connect us one to another. So I'm not necessarily thinking about the code that's being broken, particular moral peccadilloes that are being committed, even though those are important and worth talking to. But really, when I'm talking about moral decline, I'm talking about the fraying of the threads that connect us.
The fraying of the architecture of our interdependence.
Exactly.
Yes.
Which is your phrase, beautiful phrase.
It was Sue Phillips initially. But, you know, when you said that, I sort of felt a little bit of a gut punch, you know, the kind of gut punch you feel when something is so obviously so. It started me thinking back on the show we did on the opioid pandemic disaster that's plaguing the nation. And, you know, we talked some about really what's underlying the opioid epidemic is mental health issues. And then we went and peeled that layer back and said, no, actually, what is fueling that and increased rates in suicide is the price we're paying for having our national narrative, that image, the hope, the promise of America dashed against the rocks, and being in that stage where the phoenix is bursting into flames and turning to ash, not yet risen.
Yes, not yet.
Not yet risen. And
yes.
I suppose it falls to those of us who are people of faith, people of hope, or maybe even some to the simple optimists as well, to look forward for that time when it will rise. Because right now, there's just no evidence of that. And, you know, one of the things I noted about the Mueller report is that, you know, out of all the indictments, that came out of that, and there were 34, I think, indictments that came out of that investigation, and most of them were for lying. One of the things that I think about is that, you know, you and I are both ordained ministers, and it's my experience of you, and I know that it is also true for myself, that I take that those ordination vows very seriously. The privilege of being a minister, regardless of where religion is in the construct of the rest of the world, that I take that role very seriously. And I'm a minister of a small church, 80, 83 members, but that's 83 souls who I could do real damage to if I do not conduct myself well within the framework of what's been laid out vis-a-vis professional ethics.
And lying is against professional ethics.
Well, lying is against professional ethics, yeah. Deceiving people, stealing money, lining my own coffers at the expense of the people I serve, all of the things that we've seen come to light through the Mueller investigation and are now in print in the Mueller report are very striking in the sense that, my God, if most of us were to do half of what Trump and his team have done, there's no question we'd be in jail.
Yeah. So when you think of yourself in a leadership position, in a position of authority, you're not exercising power for yourself. You're exercising power on behalf of other people and for the other people's good. Or well, would you say it differently or more than that?
I might say it a little differently. Yeah. I might say I have been granted certain authority and that I have to wield that authority responsibly and for the best purpose of my faith as well as I can understand that. But one thing I think is interesting, Chris, is that when you and I decided to do the show today, I don't think we were aware that Attorney Barr was going to be giving testimony today. And one of the things that's come to light in the last 24 hours is that after Barr released his 4-page summary of the Mueller report, Mueller wrote him a letter and took some real issue with how Barr categorized his report. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
I don't really. That gets into the level of detail and what's going on right here and now that other people are going to cover in the world of journalism better than you and I are. And so I would have to think, you know, I have to spend some time reflecting on what is the meaning of Mueller's objection to Barr's characterization of his report, and how does that then play into the, again, to the
larger
narrative
picture. That's where I
that
was
I'm
going.
trying to put my mind around. So I don't have a theological reflection on Mueller's response to Barr.
It is interesting.
I mean, so here's, again, this isn't well considered because I've just thought of it in the last 15 seconds, but but I mean, part of what Mueller is contending is the truthfulness of Barr's characterization of Mueller's, his report. But again, what is the truth in the report? And Mueller is contending that Barr misrepresented.
Here again, you know, we get to the decline of America. We're not born with ethics and morality. There's been studies on that, you know, children have to learn what's right and what's wrong. In the earliest stages of ethical and moral development, there is a sort of fundamental understanding that you do what is right because if you don't, there will be consequences. And sometimes kids are inclined to think those are like magical consequences. So Billy and Jill went into the apple orchard and stole some of Mrs. Smith's apples. And as they were leaving the apple orchard, a board on the bridge broke and they fell through. And if you ask kids about that story, is why do you think that happened? Oh, because they stole the apples. So it's a very cause and effect sort of thing. But the study talks about how morality develops over time to a point, you know, where most people get to, which is, I think what you alluded to earlier, for us to coexist, there have to be certain agreements, or what we would say in religious language, a covenant, how we shall be together in order to ensure not only just sort of the fundamental safety and bricks and mortar issues, but larger, you know, our well-being.
Man, you've said so much that I want to react to one of the things early on.
Go for it.
One of the things you said early on, that this goes back to the very beginning of when we were talking about the social thread being damaged. And you talked about the opioid crisis, which we've talked to Dan Andrus about, and the incredible, unbelievable levels of deaths by opioid addiction in our culture. And I think you made the connection, and I make it too. There's an intuitive connection. Both point to a society where, again, where our connections, we don't have them, we don't feel them, we feel isolated, and we celebrate selfishness in our culture. We don't want to think that that's what we do.
Oh, but we absolutely do.
But we've gone so far towards what we couch it in is individual liberty and
success.
I mean, it's part
and
of
individual it, success. Individual we laud success. Individual success.
Right, the self-made man. That's been part of the American mythos from the beginning, and it's really kind of.
But it was balanced, Chris.
It was. No,
in the
no,
beginning,
no,
it was at least balanced.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think at certain times in our history, it rises up to a higher level.
For example, when we were colonizing the West.
Yes, right, exactly.
You know, there was
the wild frontier.
Yeah, the so-called wild frontier.
Yeah, but let me just finish my thought, because the connection I wanted to make was, at first glance, opioid crisis, Mueller report, what's the connection?
What's the connection? Oh, there is.
Yeah. And
there is one.
And the connection is the actions that Mueller investigated and outlined are all self-regard. Like, there's a breakdown in thinking on behalf of others or being connected to others. So a lot of the activities outlined in the Mueller report are about getting money for myself, some of the business connections, Flynn, Manafort, those guys, and the second thing, getting power, achieving power, the willingness to meet in Trump Tower to get dirt on Hillary Clinton is... It's self-regarding. It's self-serving. We will get the dirt from our enemy. So self-regard, self-promotion, the concern primarily for self. I don't want to characterize addicts as selfish, but it's a different flavor. It's the despair of loneliness when you can't see anything other than myself alone. My one side of that coin is myself alone. I'm going to grab power and money. The other side of that coin, self alone, is despair, and I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
Because I have no bigger sense of my connection to anything larger than my own pain.
Yeah.
So to me, I just wanted to try to outline and make explicit the connection between the Mueller report and opioids, which you did initially, and I just wanted to elaborate on that.
It was something about what you said that got me thinking about the World War II era in this country and the Greatest Generation, and realizing, one, that we had a whole bunch of people who needed work. So the government created some huge projects to put people to work, some in the arts and some in infrastructure. And out of that, you know, we had things like the Blue Ridge Mountain Parkway. I think the Route 1 stretch all the way down to Key West with all of its bridges between keys was also one of those projects. So, you know, on the one hand, we have this nation of ours that is capable of greatness, not in the sense of living into the American dream, because America never was America to too many people. I don't know. Maybe we're going to have to go all the way back to recasting the narrative of this nation and telling the truth about it in order to pull the nation together, the whole nation, each and every person, each and every nation within this nation. We're going to have to go back and be able to do some pretty hardcore truth telling. And right now, I mean, what is just being reflected through the Mueller investigation and subsequently the report, God, we can't even tell the truth about, you know, that which is staring us in the face, much less going back and trying to get a broader narrative of history that, if not true, and I'm putting quotations around the word true, is at least a little bit more historically valid. You know, I guess the good news is, at the end of the day, maybe we have placed too much hope, too much trust, too much faith in the leaders of this nation, and maybe the nation was never intended to function that way. Maybe it really is all up to us to start leading from the ground up and to start demanding more of our elected officials, more of one another. You know, maybe we're the people who have to embody the narrative.
So a slightly different take on this, Shaina, is I'm not sure that it's about who leads, whether it's the leaders, our elected officials, or from the ground up. I'm not sure that is the question as much as a kind of lack of moral architecture. What I mean by moral architecture is that we lack a sense of something larger than ourselves. It doesn't have to be God. Something so simple as truth is larger than any one person's conception of it. And what we have now is assert, assert, double down, no matter whether it's true or not. And so truth can be bigger than ourselves. Goodness, all of the virtues. We live in a functionally nihilistic culture. What I mean by nihilism is, again, this collapse of a moral architecture. And I go back to the sovereignty of the self. It's me and mine, and if I say it's so, then it is so. Moral renewal, American renewal, to my mind, is about, and I have no idea how this happens, but it's the restoration of a moral architecture. It's the restoration of the sense that, not just the sense that, but the reality that there is something bigger than me. The world is not to be conformed to me. I am to be conformed to, I am to be formed in something bigger and better and more beautiful than I am.
To, I love that you chose the word restoration. I was just reading an article in the Unitarian Universalists have a church without walls, a virtual church called Church of the Larger Fellowship, which interestingly is, I think, one of the largest prison ministries in continental North America. For the number of people it reaches out to, both incarcerated and not incarcerated. They have a monthly newsletter that comes out, and Reverend Gretchen Haley, who's from Colorado, printed an article last month entitled How It Could Have Gone. And she was reflecting on the Kavanaugh hearings. But in the context of her article, she lifts up what she calls the five R's of restoration. And it was fascinating because the first one was R. Responsibility. And she said, you know, when we're moving towards restoration, we've got to be able to take responsibility for the impact our actions had on others, not just seeing it through our own lens, but seeing it through the lens of one who may have been adversely impacted, even if their adverse impact was not our fault per se. Maybe I did something and that upset you, but if I had done it to, you know, with somebody else, they would not have had a problem with it. The upset was yours, but I can take responsibility for having sourced the upset. So taking responsibility, first of all, seems to be something we're, at least what's going on in the public square seems to be functionally incapable of. How did Robert Mueller feel about your four-page letter, Attorney Barr? I have no idea. Yes, you do, because you got a communication from him, and he was unhappy about it.
Can I riff on responsibility
Absolutely.
For a second? So what's beautiful about that, and it just fits perfectly, the root of responsibility is responding to. And if our society is governed by the sovereignty of individual selves, you don't need to be responsible in the sense of you don't need to respond to anybody or anything outside
Absolutely.
Of you. So responsibility, the very concept of responsibility, contains within it this sense of there's something I need to answer to. There's something bigger than me, another person
right.
I need to respond to, be responsible to. So I just
because
wanted to riff on that.
Because it's important not to cause pain. And the antithesis to responsibility is it's not my problem, not my circus, not my monkey, you know, your issue. And honestly, I mean, this sort of postmodernist notion of truth is relative becomes really perilous when we cannot locate, if not a truth, at like, okay, well, yeah, it is my truth. You're right. It is my truth that you inadvertently offended. And I'm inadvertently offended. So I don't know. Do you care about that? No, that's, you know, the bigger problem.
Yeah.
What Gretchen said was that, you know, when we take responsibility, when we have fully taken responsibility for something, the natural progression leads to the second R, which is remorse. Because whether or not I am responsible for your upset, as someone who recognizes the architecture of our interdependence, our connection each to each and each to all, I don't want to be responsible for creating more breakdowns. So we go from taking responsibility, first R, second R, remorse. Third, I believe, was repair, if at all possible. And I think I'm missing one. The one that I loved was the last one, which was revelation, which is when we articulate the four other R's to the person that we caused the breakdown to a wider body, to God, to spirit, to Allah, to take that which was hidden, that breakdown that we caused, and make it public. And I guess maybe Catholics would say, yep, that's what confession is for, to make public that which we have done or which we're holding in our hearts, which isn't productive and isn't something that's going to cultivate the common good. Yeah, it was a great article. I encourage people, you can look it up online. Church of the Larger, if you Google Church of the Larger Fellowship, and then you want to get into the monthly publication Quest, and the issue was April of 2019. There was also a great article in there by Reverend Mike Johnson about the power of listening to stories and how that when we really listen, and maybe the reason we don't listen as deeply as we might, is that to really listen to the pain of another is to actually take some of that pain on.
And it's to acknowledge that there's a reality outside of my own reality.
Absolutely. And I got enough of my own pain, I don't need yours. I get it, but functioning like that has gotten us here. And I guess I'm waiting for some great awakening to grab folks and to say, oh no. And maybe it is happening. No, I won't say maybe. It is happening in smaller circles, which are isolated and not getting airtime. And so maybe there's more of it than we know. But I am seeing it happen in smaller circles and, you know, smaller communities of people who, for example, you know, I look at Puerto Rico. I look at Texas, I look at other communities that have been out in California where they were devastated by forest fire. And those kinds of disasters bring people together, I think, because what becomes evident, you know, in the face of such catastrophic outcomes is that we ain't getting back on our own, that we are absolutely now going to need one another. We needed one another to survive this, and now we're going to need one another to rebuild. But I hope the national awakening doesn't require such a cataclysmic occurrence.
That recovery of the sense of we need one another, I think that's how politics will eventually change. It's going to change from the ground up. The culture has to change, and then we'll get the politics that the culture reflects, because that's why we have the politics.
That's why we have
now.
The politics we have now, because everybody who's where they are was elected. Yeah, there's a scary thought.
Because the culture that
we did this. Talk about taking responsibility.
Exactly. The culture that we have made produced what we have now.
Yeah.
And so, be curious, Shaina.
Go deep, Chris.
And shed some light. We're so happy that you could join us today, our audience. We thank you. We have a website if you want to learn more about What in God's Name. Our website is whatingods.com, WHATINGODS.
And if you'd like to make a contribution to What in God's Name, you can do that at the website, too. We have two resources through which you can contribute. If you need a tax deduction, contribute through Patreon.
No, no, no.
Oh, I did that the wrong way?
You did. If you want a tax deduction, you can contribute through Filmmakers Collaborative.
That's right. Filmmakers Collaborative.
Even though we're not making a film.
Even though we're not making a film. But
at the moment.
Friends, thanks for joining us. We look forward to being with you next week.
See you, Shaina.
See you, Chris.